It is ignorance and false belief based on a material sense of things which hides spiritual beauty and goodness. Understanding this, Paul said, neither death nor life, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God. This is the doctrine of Christian Science, that divine love cannot be deprived of its manifestation or object, that joy cannot be turned into sorrow, for sorrow is not the master of joy, that good can never produce evil, that matter can never produce mind, nor life result in death. The perfect man, governed by God, his perfect principle, is sinless and eternal. Harmony is produced by its principle, is controlled by it, and abides with it. Divine principle is the life of man. Man's happiness is not, therefore, at the disposal of physical sense. Truth is not contaminated by error. Harmony in man is as beautiful as in music, and discord is unnatural, unreal. The science of music governs tones. If mortals caught harmony through material sense, they would lose harmony if time or accident robbed them of material sense. To be master of chords and discords, the science of music must be understood. Left to the decisions of material sense, music is liable to be misapprehended and lost in confusion. Controlled by belief instead of understanding, music is, must be, imperfectly expressed. So man, not understanding the science of being, thrusting aside his divine principle as incomprehensible, is abandoned to conjectures, left in the hands of ignorance, placed at the disposal of illusions, subjected to material sense, which is discord. A discontented, discordant mortal is no more a man than discord is music. A picture in the camera or a face reflected in the mirror is not the original, though resembling it. Man, in the likeness of his maker, reflects the central light of being, the invisible God. As there is no corporeality in the mirrored form, which is but a reflection, so man, like all things real, reflects God, his divine principle, not in a mortal body. Gender also is a quality not of God, but a characteristic of mortal mind. The verity that God's image is not a creator, though he reflects the creation of mind, God, constitutes the underlying reality of reflection. Then answered Jesus and said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he seeth the Father do. For what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. The inverted images presented by the senses, the deflections of matter as opposed to the science of spiritual reflection, are all unlike spirit, God. In the illusion of life that is here today and gone tomorrow, man would be wholly mortal were it not that love, the divine principle that obtains in divine science, destroys all error and brings immortality to light. Because man is the reflection of his maker, he is not subject to birth, growth, maturity, decay. These mortal dreams are of human origin, not divine. The Sadducees reasoned falsely about the resurrection, but not so blindly as the Pharisees, who believed error to be as immortal as truth. The Pharisees thought that they could raise the spiritual from the material. They would first make life result in death, and then resort to death to reproduce spiritual life. Jesus taught them how death was to be overcome by spiritual life, and demonstrated this beyond cavil. Life demonstrates life. The immortality of soul makes man immortal. If God, who is life, were parted for a moment from his reflection, man, during that moment, there would be no divinity reflected. The ego would be unexpressed, and the Father would be childless, no Father. If life or soul and its representative, man, unite for a period and then are separated, as by a law of divorce, to be brought together again at some uncertain future time, and in a manner unknown, and this is the general religious opinion of mankind, we are left without a rational proof of immortality. But man cannot be separated for an instant from God, if man reflects God. Thus, science proves man's existence to be intact. The myriad forms of mortal thought made manifest as matter are not more distinct nor real to the material senses than are the soul-created forms to spiritual sense, which cognizes life as permanent. Undisturbed amid the jarring testimony of the material senses, science, still enthroned, is unfolding to mortals the immutable, harmonious, divine principle, is unfolding life and the universe, ever-present and eternal. God's man, spiritually created, is not material and mortal. The parent of all human discord was the Adam dream, the deep sleep, in which originated the delusion that life and intelligence proceeded from and passed into matter. This pantheistic error, or so-called serpent, insists still upon the opposite of truth, saying, "Ye shall be as gods," that is, "I will make error as real and eternal as truth." Evil still affirms itself to be mind, and declares that there is more than one intelligence or God. It says, "There shall be lords and gods many. I declare that God makes evil minds and evil spirits, and that I aid him. Truth shall change sides and be unlike spirit. I will put spirit into what I call matter, and matter shall seem to have life as much as God, spirit, who is the only life." This error has proved itself to be error. Its life is found to be not life, but only a transient, false sense of an existence which ends in death. Error charges its lie to truth and says, "The Lord knows it. He has made man mortal and material out of matter instead of spirit." Thus, error partakes of its own nature and utters its own falsities. If we regard matter as intelligent and mind as both good and evil, every sin or supposed material pain and pleasure seems normal, a part of God's creation, and so weighs against our course spiritward. Truth has no beginning. The divine mind is the soul of man and gives man dominion over all things. Man was not created from a material basis, nor bidden to obey material laws which spirit never made. His province is in spiritual statutes, in the higher law of mind. Above error's awful din, blackness, and chaos, the voice of truth still calls, Adam, where art thou? Consciousness, where art thou? Art thou dwelling in the belief that mind is in matter and that evil is mind? Or art thou in the living faith that there is and can be but one God and keeping his commandment? Until the lesson is learned that God is the only mind governing man, mortal belief will be afraid as it was in the beginning and will hide from the demand, where art thou? This awful demand, Adam, where art thou, is met by the admission from the head, heart, stomach, blood, nerves, etc. Lo, here I am, looking for happiness and life in the body, but finding only an illusion, a blending of false claims, false pleasure, pain, sin, sickness, and death. The soul-inspired patriarchs heard the voice of truth and talked with God as consciously as man talks with man. Jacob was alone, wrestling with error, struggling with a mortal sense of life, substance, and intelligence as existent in matter with its false pleasures and pains, when an angel, a message from truth and love, appeared to him and smote the sinew or strength of his error, till he saw its unreality. And truth, being thereby understood, gave him spiritual strength in this penile of divine science. Then said the spiritual evangel, Let me go, for the day breaketh. That is, the light of truth and love dawns upon thee. But the patriarch, perceiving his error and his need of help, did not loosen his hold upon this glorious light until his nature was transformed. When Jacob was asked, What is thy name? He straightway answered, and then his name was changed to Israel, for as a prince had he prevailed, and had power with God and with men. Then Jacob questioned his deliverer, Tell me, I pray thee, thy name. But this appellation was withheld, for the messenger was not a corporeal being, but a nameless, incorporeal impartation of divine love to man, which, to use the word of the psalmist, restored his soul, gave him the spiritual sense of being, and rebuked his material sense. The result of Jacob's struggle thus appeared. He had conquered material error with the understanding of spirit and of spiritual power. This changed the man. He was no longer called Jacob, but Israel, a prince of God or a soldier of God who had fought a good fight. He was to become the father of those who, through earnest striving, followed his demonstration of the power of spirit over the material senses. And the children of earth who followed his example were to be called the children of Israel, until the Messiah should rename them. If these children should go astray and forget that life is God, good, and that good is not in elements which are not spiritual, thus losing the divine power which heals the sick and sinning, they were to be brought back through great tribulation, to be renamed in Christian Science, and led to deny material sense or mind in matter, even as the gospel teaches. The science of being shows it to be impossible for infinite spirit or soul to be in a finite body, or for man to have an intelligence separate from his maker. It is a self-evident error to suppose that there can be such a reality as organic animal or vegetable life, when such so-called life always ends in death. Life is never for a moment extinct. Therefore, it is never structural nor organic, and is never absorbed nor limited by its own formations. The artist is not in his painting. The picture is the artist's thought objectified. The human belief fancies that it delineates thought on matter, but what is matter? Did it exist prior to thought? Matter is made up of supposititious mortal mind force, but all might is divine mind. Thought will finally be understood and seen in all form, substance, and color, but without material accompaniments. The potter is not in the clay, else the clay would have power over the potter. God is his own infinite mind and expresses all. Day may decline and shadows fall, but darkness flees when the earth has again turned upon its axis. The sun is not affected by the revolution of the earth. So science reveals soul as God, untouched by sin and death, as the central life and intelligence around which circle harmoniously all things in the systems of mind. Soul changeth not. We are commonly taught that there is a human soul which sins and is spiritually lost, that soul may be lost and yet be immortal. If soul could sin, spirit, soul would be flesh instead of spirit. It is the belief of the flesh and of material sense which sins. If soul sinned, soul would die. Sin is the element of self-destruction, and spiritual death is oblivion. If there was sin in soul, the annihilation of spirit would be inevitable. The only life is spirit, and if spirit should lose life as God, good, then spirit, which has no other existence, would be annihilated. Mind is God, and God is not seen by material sense, because mind is spirit, which material sense cannot discern. There is neither growth, maturity, nor decay in soul. These changes are the mutations of material sense, the varying clouds of mortal belief which hide the truth of being. What we term mortal mind or carnal mind, dependent on matter for manifestation, is not mind. God is mind. All that mind God is or hath made is good, and he made all. Hence evil is not made and is not real. Soul is immortal because it is spirit, which has no element of self-destruction. Is man lost spiritually? No, he can only lose a sense material. All sin is of the flesh. It cannot be spiritual. Sin exists here or hereafter only so long as the illusion of mind in matter remains. It is a sense of sin and not a sinful soul which is lost. Evil is destroyed by the sense of good. Through false estimates of soul as dwelling in sense and of mind as dwelling in matter, Belief strays into a sense of temporary loss or absence of soul spiritual truth. This state of error is the mortal dream of life and substance as existent in matter, and is directly opposite to the immortal reality of being. So long as we believe that soul can sin, or that immortal soul is in mortal body, we can never understand the science of being. When humanity does understand this science, it will become the law of life to man, even the higher law of soul, which prevails over material sense through harmony and immortality. The objects cognized by the physical senses have not the reality of substance. They are only what mortal belief calls them. Matter, sin, and mortality lose all supposed consciousness or claim to life or existence as mortals lay off a false sense of life, substance, and intelligence. But the spiritual, eternal man is not touched by these phases of mortality. How true it is that whatever is learned through material sense must be lost, because such so-called knowledge is reversed by the spiritual facts of being in science. That which material sense calls intangible is found to be substance. What to material sense seems substance becomes nothingness as the sense dream vanishes and reality appears. The senses regard a corpse not as man, but simply as matter. People say, man is dead. But this death is the departure of a mortal's mind, not of matter. The matter is still there. The belief of that mortal that he must die occasioned his departure. Yet you say that matter has caused his death. People go into ecstasies over the sense of a corporeal Jehovah, though with scarcely a spark of love in their hearts. Yet God is love, and without love, God, immortality cannot appear. Mortals try to believe without understanding truth. Yet God is truth. Mortals claim that death is inevitable, but man's eternal principle is ever-present life. Mortals believe in a finite personal God, while God is infinite love, which must be unlimited. Our theories are based on finite premises which cannot penetrate beyond matter. A personal sense of God and of man's capabilities necessarily limits faith and hinders spiritual understanding. It divides faith and understanding between matter and spirit, the finite and the infinite, and so turns away from the intelligent and divine healing principle to the inanimate drug. Jesus' spiritual origin and his demonstration of divine principle richly endowed him and entitled him to sonship in science. He was the son of a virgin. The term Christ Jesus, or Jesus the Christ, to give the full and proper translation of the Greek, may be rendered Jesus the Anointed, Jesus the God-crowned, or the divinely royal man, as it is said of him in the first chapter of Hebrews. Therefore God, even thy God, hath anointed thee with the oil of gladness above thy fellows. With this agrees another passage in the same chapter, which refers to the Son as the brightness of his God's glory, and the expressed image of his person, infinite mind. it is noteworthy that the phrase express image in the common version is, in the Greek Testament, character. Using this word in its higher meaning, we may assume that the author of this remarkable epistle regarded Christ as the Son of God, the royal reflection of the infinite, and the cause given for the exaltation of Jesus, Mary's son, was that he loved righteousness and hated iniquity. The passage is made even clearer in the translation of the late George R. Noyes, D.D., who, being a brightness from his glory and an image of his being, Jesus of Nazareth was the most scientific man that ever trod the globe. He plunged beneath the material surface of things and found the spiritual cause. To accommodate himself to immature ideas of spiritual power, for spirituality was possessed only in a limited degree even by his disciples, Jesus called the body, which by spiritual power he raised from the grave, flesh and bones. To show that the substance of himself was spirit, and the body no more perfect because of death, and no less material until the ascension, his further spiritual exaltation, Jesus waited until the mortal or fleshly sense had relinquished the belief of substance matter, and spiritual sense had quenched all earthly yearnings. Thus he found the eternal ego, and proved that he and the Father were inseparable as God and his reflection, or spiritual man. Our Master gained the solution of being, demonstrating the existence of but one mind without a second or equal. The Jews, who sought to kill this man of God, showed plainly that their material views were the parents of their wicked deeds. When Jesus spoke of reproducing his body, knowing, as he did, that mind was the builder, and said, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up," they thought that he meant their material temple instead of his body. To such materialists, the real man seemed a specter, unseen and unfamiliar, and the body, which they laid in a sepulcher, seemed to be substance. This materialism lost sight of the true Jesus, but the faithful Mary saw him, and he presented to her more than ever before the true idea of life and substance. Because of mortals' material and sinful belief, the spiritual Jesus was imperceptible to them. The higher his demonstration of divine science carried the problem of being, and the more distinctly he uttered the demands of its divine principle, truth and love, the more odious he became to sinners and to those who, depending on doctrines and material laws to save them from sin and sickness, were submissive to death as being in supposed accord with the inevitable law of life. Jesus proved them wrong by his resurrection and said, "Whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die." That saying of our Master, "I and my Father are one," separated him from the scholastic theology of the rabbis. His better understanding of God was a rebuke to them. He knew of but one mind and laid no claim to any other. He knew that the ego was mind instead of body, and that matter, sin, and evil were not mind. And his understanding of this divine science brought upon him the anathemas of the age. the opposite and false views of the people hid from their sense Christ's sonship with God. They could not discern his spiritual existence. Their carnal minds were at enmity with it. Their thoughts were filled with mortal error instead of with God's spiritual idea as presented by Christ Jesus. The likeness of God we lose sight of through sin, which beclouds the spiritual sense of truth. And we realize this likeness only when we subdue sin and prove man's heritage, the liberty of the sons of God. Jesus' spiritual origin and understanding enabled him to demonstrate the facts of being, to prove irrefutably how spiritual truth destroys material error, heals sickness, and overcomes death. The divine conception of Jesus pointed to this truth and presented an illustration of creation. The history of Jesus shows him to have been more spiritual than all other earthly personalities. Wearing in part a human form, that is, as it seemed to mortal view, being conceived by a human mother, Jesus was the mediator between spirit and the flesh, between truth and error. Explaining and demonstrating the way of divine science, he became the way of salvation to all who accepted his word. From him, mortals may learn how to escape from evil. The real man being linked by science to his Maker, mortals need only turn from sin and lose sight of mortal selfhood to find Christ, the real man and his relation to God, and to recognize the divine sonship. Christ, truth, was demonstrated through Jesus to prove the power of spirit over the flesh, to show that truth is made manifest by its effects upon the human mind and body, healing sickness and destroying sin. Jesus represented Christ, the true idea of God. Hence the warfare between this spiritual idea and perfunctory religion, between spiritual clear-sightedness and the blindness of popular belief, which led to the conclusion that the spiritual idea could be killed by crucifying the flesh. The Christ idea, or the Christ man, rose higher to human view because of the crucifixion, and thus proved that truth was the master of death. Christ presents the indestructible man, whom spirit creates, constitutes, and governs. Christ illustrates that blending with God, his divine principle, which gives man dominion over all the earth. The spiritual idea of God, as presented by Jesus, was scourged in person, and its principle was rejected. That man was accounted a criminal who could prove God's divine power by healing the sick, casting out evils, spiritualizing materialistic beliefs, and raising the dead, those dead in trespasses and sins, satisfied with the flesh, resting on the basis of matter, blind to the possibilities of spirit and its correlative truth.